We're here with Josue Joseph, the executive producer and director for La Epoca Part 1, and La Epoca Part 2 will be coming up. You strike me as a man on a mission just watching the trailers of the original film. What originally inspired this effort?
That's an excellent question. I think when you see the film, you'll know, firstly, it's really a theme of family, and I come from a family of producers. My father is one of the legends of the Palladium era. He recorded with Arsenio Rodriguez, Tito Puente, Celia Cruz, Johnny Pacheco, Eddie Palmieri, Charlie Palmieri. So all of the musicians that precede salsa, these Afro-Cubans that came from Cuba, my father was their bass player. So the inspiration really is about honoring family and the fact that we have a father, all my seven of my siblings, we have a father whose legacy precedes all of this, was really the inspiration, saying, you know what, when Tito Puente died, soon after he agreed to be in the movie, but he died and with him went his legacy. Then Celia Cruz dies 2 weeks later after she agreed to be in the movie. I said, I've got to travel and film dancers and musicians. And so that's really the primary inspiration, was really about family, theme of family, but was also documenting the legacies and the contributions of these amazing, amazing musicians and dancers, and just sharing that knowledge. Really, that's really what it comes down to, is family and preserving tradition.
In the course of putting your background material together, did you learn anything from the musicians and dancers that surprised you personally, that you weren't expecting to learn?
To be honest with you, I did quite a bit. I grew up with Cachao and Tito Puente, and my father always telling me that my father was a legend, and seeing them and hearing them all playing music together was really inspiring. And hearing, I remember I had an experience with Cachao. I don't know if you know Cachao is from Cuba.
Oh, yes.
And I had an experience with him one time where he was playing music, and I just, you know, I just yelled out, "Oh, me gusta esta salsa." I was like everybody else. I was a kid. And he just stopped everything and yelled at me and said, "Esto no es salsa. Esto es un son montuno." You know, so he told me specifically, "This is a son montuno." Tito Puente did likewise. And it was explained to me that there is no salsa, that it's really just, they never would say that it's a mix of rhythms, because salsa does not contain these original rhythms. What they said is that it's a mix of what used to be these rhythms under one umbrella term, salsa. And then I learned when I was growing up, I didn't know much of the musicality, even though I'm a musician. It wasn't until later when I learned that what makes a son montuno, and what makes a mambo no longer exists under what is called salsa today. And that's really probably the brightest light that went on in my head, was like, wow, there's a whole family of rhythms out there that no longer really exists, unless someone like myself or anyone in my family or those who are the children of these legends do what I'm doing, which is, you know, making it happen, come to life again.
Did you get any insights into why these rhythms got moved out of the forefront over the years?
I did, and that comes from an argument that this is another bright light to answer your previous question. In 1965, there was an argument between Arsenio Rodriguez and Johnny Pacheco, which gave birth to Fania, which gave birth to salsa. The argument was in the Bronx, in New York, in 1965, and pretty much Arsenio was there with, it was my father, Agustin Caraballoso, Chocolate Armenteros, Vintin Paz, Marcelino Guerra, and Arsenio's two brothers, one of which was named Raul, he played timbales, and the other brother was named Quique, and he played conga. Now, Arsenio was blind, so he needed Quique to guide him around and do what he needed to do. And if you don't know who Arsenio was, he was pretty much the grandfather of what is...
Pretty fair amount in my collection.
There you go. So my father was his bassist for the last 8 years of Arsenio's life. So they were performing at a club in the Bronx, and the second orchestra to go up was Pacheco's orchestra. and featuring Tito Puente and Pacheco's orchestra. So all of the musicians happened to be there tonight because Rodriguez had only one more set to go, and then it was going to switch into Pacheco. But they all happened to be there, and they all went on a break outside. And Raul was feeling sick, so he asked Arsenio if he can go home early. So Arsenio's like, well, I do need a timbalero. So, of course, he tapped Puente to come on. So, of course, Puente hadn't been rehearsing with the band, so they needed to go in really quickly and get this one track down. So my father was leading Puente in on the break and counting him in. Okay, two, three, four. And Puente, as a master musician as he was unable to get the break. So basically what happened is from this incident where Puente is trying to get it and my father's leading him in, and then you have another conga, Mangual, Jose Mangual Sr., before he passed away, he was also helping Puente try to get this break, couldn't, so Pacheco leans in from the side and says, it's because your bass player and your conga player playing too many notes. So, of course, Arsenio Rodriguez, the originator of the guaguancó, of the mambo, and of the son montuno rhythms, he flips out and says, no seas ladrón, don't be a thief, this is mine. And from that, Pacheco goes off and creates Fania. In the proof of this, Arsenio wrote a song called Kiko Medina. It's a Congolese dialect. Kiko meaning Johnny, Medina meaning Pacheco, and he's making fun of Pacheco in this song. This came out in 1967, and in it, it has the lyrics that say, Yo no canto como muchacho porque me faltas respeto, which means, I don't sing like a little boy, so why are you disrespecting me? So, of course, Pacheco returns the favor in 1973, comes out with the song called La Esencia del Guaguancó. And in that, he has the lyrics that say, No hay quien, con Pacheco no hay quien pueda, es el rey del guaguancó. Like Pacheco, there is nobody because Pacheco's the king of the guaguancó. So there you have a battle going on where Pacheco's saying directly to Arsenio, you created it, but I could do it better and I've been the king. So that's really the birth of Fania. That's what I learned.
Are there any bands now that, in your opinion, are still preserving some of the original rhythms well, rather than just blending them all together in this stew we call salsa now?
Tricky question. I'm not too fond of music that does not come out of Afro-Cuban elements. However, I would say the Puerto Rican community has been done wonderfully, and El Gran Combo, believe it or not, they do an excellent job. There's one song from El Gran Combo called Arroz con Habichuelas. That's a song montuno rhythm, and they keep it authentic. Funny thing about it is it starts off as a 3-2 clave, and then in the middle of the song it switches to a 2-3 clave. Beautiful, beautiful song montuno. Grupo Niche, as talented as musicians as they are, they do not keep it authentic according to the Afro-Cuban tradition, but they're still a very talented group of musicians. But I would say definitely El Gran Combo. And anybody that Cachao's orchestra or old orchestra, he definitely plays it. And definitely Buena Vista. They keep it original.
Okay. You've been in a few cities now, and just from watching the trailers for the film that were on your website, I assume there are some things in there that might give current dance instructors pause. What sort of reaction have you had earlier in the tour after the film has been aired?
This is the third year that we're doing this, and for the first film, we got a lot of people who danced on one who kind of felt a little bit slated, that maybe we didn't give them enough credit. And what's funny about it is, in the first film, we didn't give the salsa on two credit either, but somehow it was only the on one crowd that got upset about it, and which was totally taken out of context. Really, the issue is that we felt as producers, my sister and my brother as producers, we felt that everybody today dances on one and New York on salsa on two. So why are we going to do a movie based on what they already know? We wanted to go back and to precede what preceded that. Mm-hmm. So we focused on the palladium style of the mambo. a lot of salsa on two dancers feel somehow more connected to that Palladium style, even though they don't dance it. So they really didn't give too much of a fight. So the second film, what we're doing is to overcome that, we're giving credit to everybody, all styles, and we're also giving examples in the second movie for all different styles so that everybody knows, okay, I'm justified dancing like this when this particular rhythm and this particular song comes on. The second movie, I think a lot of salsa on two dancers, they're not going to be upset by it from so far what we've screened, but they are certainly, their world has been turned upside down so far from the screening that we've done, because a lot of salsa on two dancers claim to be dancing to a 2-3 clave, but arithmetic doesn't lie, numbers don't lie. They're not dancing to a 2-3 clave, they're dancing to a 3-2 clave, but they're borrowing the 2 from the 2-3 clave. And that's really that major piece of information, that's probably the biggest piece of information outside of the rhythms that the salsa on two dancers we're going to walk away from. They're going to learn what they've really never known, is that they're dancing to a 3-2 clave, not a 2-3 clave, but they're borrowing the 2, which justifies dancing to a 2-3 clave.
I've heard some discussion and occasionally even argument from dancers about the concept of musicality as it's being taught to dancers now versus just going back and listening to the bands intensively. What's your take on all of this?
On musicality? Mm-hmm. Well, I'm a very humble person, so let me just humbly say that any dance instructor or anyone who calls himself a dancer, both, I feel that it would behoove them to take a music class, not a musicality class, but a music class to understand music. If they understand music, then they have a basic fundamental background. So when they're teaching their students, for example, everybody uses this word clave, and it's become a status symbol for a lot of instructors. But I challenge any student who's being taught clave by anybody to challenge that instructor and say, okay, what's this song? Is it a 2-3 clave or is it a 3, and why? And what is a mambo? Can a mambo be a 3-2 clave or is it only a 2-3? Challenge your instructors. Get to know how much information that they know so that you are being fed the right information so that when you're dancing, you can have a true connection, not with the music. You got to go beyond the music. You have to have, if you want to have that connection, have a connection with whoever arranged that music. That's really where it comes from. I'm a writer. I'm a musician as well. Mm-hmm. So when I write music and I see people dancing to it completely opposite to the way I danced, I always ask myself, are you listening to the same thing that I wrote, same thing that I listened to? Because it's not what it is, and it's almost offensive. I mean, listen, Arsenio Rodriguez, if he was alive right now and he saw people dancing and listened to the music, I think it'd be pretty insulting to be like, okay, all that hard work and sweat that I just put into, where did it go? Because this is not what it is. So to answer your question, musicality, when it comes down to musicality, it's something that's growing right now. A lot of people are very much interested in it, but regrettably, there's not too many people out there that have that knowledge, that are able to articulate it and present it in a way where it is absolutely 100% based on arithmetic. Here is what, and have a thorough knowledge on what it is. That's really what it is. I've met a couple of people that want to be in the movie that have made a career out of themselves teaching musicality, but about maybe 15 minutes into my interview with them to find out what they really know, I realize they're really just trying to get information from me to build up where they are. And I think that, not talking badly about them, what I'm saying is, obviously, the people who have become very high in the level of a career of being musicality instructors, even their knowledge is very limited. So I think it's very important that everybody, so that everybody's on the same page, take music courses, understand the music.
Interesting. How far along are you with part 2, and what's your big goal? What do you want to accomplish with the second part of the movie that wasn't covered in the first?
Very good question. We're actually almost done with production. We expect to have the Los Angeles premiere in August or September. The New York premiere will also be in September. So we expect to be done, obviously, sometime by August. We will hope to be done with part 2. I'm here in Chicago filming dancers. I just got back from Dallas last week and a couple weeks ago to New York. And then we're going to Houston and Atlanta. We're just London, heading up the London International Salsa Congress there. Mm-hmm. Headed to Germany about a week after that to do the Congress over there. So definitely traveling, filming dancers for part two. And to answer your second part of your question is that our goal is to get this movie into every university that has a Latin course or any Latin music history or musicality system or curriculum. And then our goal is secondary to that is also to get into every music studio, a dance studio that teaches authentic Latin dancing. And then thirdly is to get it in the hands of every dancer so that they can truly understand what it is. And beyond that, when we, you know, obviously we're doing the screenings and theaters and television, that's really that's where we're headed ultimately.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the UK and Germany. Are you going anywhere else internationally? Let's say Canada, France.
Canada, you know, I've been invited several times, and it's either the scheduling, it just doesn't work out, or everything is so spread out that their funding becomes an issue to be able to get, say, 300 people together to watch a film and then dance afterwards. When you're spread out like that, it's kind of difficult to ask people come from 50, 60, 70, 80 miles away. Uh-huh. So funding becomes a problem for them where they can't afford to get us into their city, which is regrettable because I really wish it didn't come down to money. You know, for them. Internationally, Prague, Lithuania, definitely on the ticket. I just mentioned Berlin, Munich, London, Barcelona, Warsaw in Poland, St. Petersburg in Russia, Budapest, my favorite city among them, and Bucharest in Romania. I say it humbly, if you're a dancer or a musician or both, it would be so important just to take a course in music or truly understand what it is and start trying to establish a connection that goes far beyond what commercial music does today, but instead go to the relationship with the musician and the arranger and understand what's going on in the music so that you can understand when you hear a song and you hear that it's a 3-2 clave. Well, you know if it's a 3-2 clave, it was written for on one dancers, it was also written for salsa on two dancers. If it's a 2-3 clave, hands down, you know it was written for palladium era dancers, or maybe for some dancers that dance salsa on two if they truly know the musicality behind it. So I would love for people to be able to make that distinction. A lot of people already do. They just don't know how to put terminology to it. For example, I've met people who say, oh, I don't go to that club because they play on one music. But they're not able to articulate what makes it on one music. And the reason why what makes it an on one music is because the bass will strike very hard on the first beat of the music instead of on the eighth. And that's a 3-2 clave, and that's why you get on one dancers that go to that.
You mentioned you're also a composer and a musician. Where you're wearing your musician's hat rather than your filmmaker's hat, what sort of material are you doing and in what setting?
Well, actually, as we're speaking, the soundtrack was just playing in the background for part two. You know, that's, for me, that's probably the most exciting part of doing movies. Mm-hmm. For me, it's the soundtrack. Mm-hmm. It's just writing music that really hasn't been written before and allowing these legacies to inspire me to write authentic rhythms and make it so melodic. I have a classical background, so I don't stick with the commercial stuff. I don't stick with, even though it's funny, they were just playing a song that we wrote as a joke, right? We did this song on part two. It's called No lo dejes de tocar. Don't stop playing that, right? The whole first half of the song is a standard salsa. It's what everybody today would hear. So we're going to put it in the movie, and people are going to hear it. They're going to be like, oh, yeah, that's salsa. But then halfway through, it switches to an Afro-Cuban element, and you will undoubtedly notice the difference between what is today and what used to be.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.